Hi, I'm Mike Dilke and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi and thank you for joining me on this week's Relax Back UK show. What do you think the topic is this week?
When people have a quick scrub around, and I've got patients who'll say, oh, I use a manual brush because I do it quicker. I say, no, you've still got to do your 2 minutes. You don't get to do it quicker just because you're not being timed. So I think the key is less about the time, but it's more about, in your mind's eye, have you been around every single surface?
It is teeth and oral hygiene. I tried to ask Miranda Steeples, the president of the British Society of Dental Hygiene and Therapy, all the questions on looking after your teeth that I can think of. What sort of brush? When to brush? Does the hygienist really know if they ask you if you floss and you say yes? Of course I do. But really you don't. Do they really know the truth? That and an awful lot more information. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. My guest is Miranda Steeples, and she's president of the British Society of Dental Hygiene and Therapy. And the topic is teeth and oral hygiene. So my first question to her was, are you a dental hygienist?
Well, I'm actually a duly qualified dental hygienist and dental therapist. Slight distinction between the two, but I started life as a dental nurse years and years ago. And then I decided that I wanted to get stuck in and get my hands in there and do some operative work as well.
Okay, now you're going to have to tell me the difference between a hygienist and what was the other phrase, the other term, a dental therapist. Right, what's that?
So a dental therapist is sort of the bridge between a dental hygienist and a dentist. We have been around for a good few decades now, a good sort of 60-70 years, in other countries for longer. So a dental hygienist would typically, which most people have heard of, will typically take care of your gum health. So they'll clean your teeth, they'll help give you information and points and hints and tips of how to maintain your cleaning better. So either with particular toothbrush to use or how to clean in between the teeth, give you all the preventive advice, smoking advice, alcohol advice, diet advice, things like that to help maintain a healthy mouth. And then the dental therapist will do all of those things as well. But additionally, we can do fillings for adults and for children. So if you've got a chipped tooth or something's fallen out, we can replace it, you know, if it's a simple filling like that. And then in terms of children's dental health, if hopefully avoided, but if needed, we can extract children's teeth as well. So if you're a child, we can take care of everything for you.
So you do a bit more than a hygienist, but a bit less than a dentist. Is that more or less?
Yeah, that's probably the best way of looking at it. So if you think of a typical high street dentist, that the treatments that they might offer, the only things that we're not permitted to do would be anything that involves a laboratory, so a crown, a bridge or a denture. So we can't make anything like that. We can't do root canal treatments for adult teeth and we can't extract adult teeth. But your general stuff you'll get on the high street dental practice, a dental therapist can take care of outside of that.
Okay, all right. I didn't know that. So that's very good. Thank you for educating me. So the idea of this show really is to get to grips with the nation's teeth. But I suppose this, are our teeth as a nation really that bad? Are we in bad shape?
Well, I don't know. How does one define bad? I try not to use language like bad or good. I think my benchmark with my patients is, can you eat your favourite dinner? And if they don't hurt and you're happy to smile, then that's probably a good place to start. And that's where the Oral Health Foundation is coming in with National Smile Month. Their theme is Love Your Smile. And that's why we've decided to work in partnership with them this year to help spread those messages about how people can care for their smile, the food and drink to have or to try not to have so much of, thinking about how your smile affects your confidence and your mental well-being, and then to talk about oral health or oral hygiene products that people might want to try using, and then also the thing that is really close to my heart as a preventer, as a dental hygienist and dental therapist, is about the diseases and conditions, you know, the two-way link between mouth health and full body health.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah. Now, I definitely want to ask you some more details about that later on.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, what about some real basics?
Yeah.
Brushing teeth. When and how often should we brush?
Twice a day, every single day. Bedtime is the most important one. That's the one to really spend your time, you know, take your time on that one. And then one other time in the day, which is typically going to be in the morning when you're getting yourself up and ready to go out for the day.
Right. And the morning one, should that be before or after breakfast?
Ideally, it should be before breakfast. The reason being for that is because anytime you have anything to eat or drink, generally there's going to be some form of sugar in there somewhere, unless it's water or a black tea or coffee. And so the plaque bacteria that are sitting on your teeth, they'll feed on that sugar and they use it for energy just the same as we do. They metabolize it just like we do. And then as a waste product, they produce an acid. And it's not a very strong acid, but it is strong enough that it will basically, the word we use is demineralize, but you could also use dissolve. It means the same thing. It weakens that tooth enamel. And so then the tooth enamel is weak, it's soft. And so then if you brush straight away, then you actually risk causing damage to that tooth enamel. So unless you can wait half an hour or so after you've eaten, which some people might be able to do, then you're not going to cause any damage. So that's why we recommend brushing before breakfast, because then you're brushing that plaque away, so there's less bacteria around to be feeding on that sugar. And then you're also coating the teeth with fluoride as well, which acts as like a shield or a barrier and helps to make the teeth more acid and decay resistant.
Okay, right, good tip there. Right, what electric or manual toothbrushes?
Whatever works for you is the bottom line. There's stacks of research. We have to use a toolkit called Delivering Better Oral Health. And that does show time and time again that a toothbrush with a head that oscillates and rotates, so, you know, that's a round head that moves in those directions, tends to come up better. But then there's also a lot of other powered brushes out there that move up and down that will also be effective. And they have a slightly different feel in the mouth. So I think for a patient, if you're choosing a brush, even if it's the top of the range, the best brush out there, if you don't like how that feels, you're not going to want to do it for 2 minutes. So for my patients, I tend to say, look, whatever's comfortable that you know you can brush for 2 minutes with. And for some people, that might be a manual brush. And for some people, brushing with a manual brush is absolutely fine. They do a lovely job. They don't cause damage. And they're my two benchmarks, really. If, as long as you're getting the plaque off your teeth, you're not causing any damage to your teeth or to your gums, then use whatever is more comfortable for you.
Okay. Actually, you mentioned it when you were talking then. I was going to say, all right, how long? You mentioned 2 minutes.
Yes,
is 2 minutes the gold standard?
That's the current gold standard. But, you know, again, it's, I don't know, it's a real sort of sticky point, isn't it? Because not everyone has 32 teeth. You know, that's the full set of adult teeth. And I don't have 32 teeth. Some people might only have 3 or 4 teeth. I think it's a good guideline, because all too often people have a quick scrub around, and I've got patients who'll say, oh, I use a manual brush because I do it quicker. I say, no, you've still got to do your 2 minutes. You don't get to do it quicker just because you're not being timed. So I think the key is less about the time, but it's more about, in your mind's eye, have you been around every single surface of every single tooth? And do the tongue test. Run your tongue around your teeth when you've finished. Do they feel smooth? Do they feel a bit furry? If they feel a bit fuzzy, then get your brush in there again.
All right. So 2 minutes. Is it possible to overbrush if you get carried away?
Yes, certainly. And it's always really difficult to say that to patients, because they're trying so hard and their teeth are so clean that they have overbrushed, and you can risk pushing the gums back. Then when you've got the root surfaces exposed, that can lead to sensitivity. So like the Oral Health Foundation discovered with their research they recently carried out, you know, there's about just over a third of patients or people that they surveyed do have sensitive teeth. So that's if you touch them, or if there's anything too cold, then that might be because there's been some gum recession. Sometimes it could be because it's decay. But if you're over scrubbing, then yeah, you can risk making your teeth sensitive.
Okay. Now, you kind of did a bit of a survey recently and found some reasons why people might not go to the dentist. What was the biggest one?
Well, the biggest things really were around fear. It was about 36%, I think it was, that cited sort of fear and anxiety about what might happen, if they need treatment. And often it's the fear of the unknown. And so what I would say to anyone listening who thinks, oh yes, that's me, try not to be fearful. Obviously, I think it's a totally natural thing to fear. You're meeting a comparative stranger, and within a minute, you're on your back, your mouth's open, they're coming at you with sharp, pointy things. I think it's natural to be apprehensive, but if you can express that fear to whoever you're seeing, whether it's a dentist, whether it's a dental hygienist or dental therapist, whoever your clinician is, say to them, I'm a little bit nervous about this, or I'm worried about X. If there's something particular that you're really worried about, then just tell them, because they might be able to mitigate that. They might be able to take a little bit more time. And there's the universal language of if you put your hand up, it will stop. As a patient, you're actually in control. So,
Yeah.
just remember that, I suppose. And some people.
I'm wondering if the anxiety or fear stems from something actually which you're not actually in control of, and that's the potential of the final bill, actually. I'm not sure if it's I've been scared of going to the dentist. I think it's been scared of the bill at the end of it, because the cost can rack up. So I think people might just be better off happier not knowing.
I guess there are some people that would have that thought process, definitely. That wouldn't be an unusual thing to think about. And obviously, cost of living, it's in the media all over the place. People do have to be really mindful and think about where they're spending their money, how they allocate that, where can they
Yeah.
afford to channel it.
And there's a
And
big issue of, NHS dentist dental deserts, and it's probably another program actually, but it is hard to get an appointment very often.
It can be a challenge, and that's where we've come into partnership with the Aura Health Foundation for this, is to basically spread the message that not everybody will need to see a dentist. A lot of care could be undertaken by a dental therapist, by a dental hygienist. Patients can see one of us directly. They don't need to go via a dentist in the first instance. And the bottom line is that prevention in the long run actually saves you money. So if you get those good habits on board, then you can prevent these diseases, prevent the need for treatment.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
One question, which may have, I don't know if it was in the survey or not, but you'll probably know the answer anyway. How many of us lie to our hygienist when they say, "How about flossing?" Because we all say, "Oh yeah, we all floss." But do you know, do you actually know if we do or don't? Because I suspect you all know and you're just all kind of kind to us.
Oh, we absolutely do know, but I think my patients are lovely. I've been seeing them for a long time, and they also know that I'm not going to judge them. I think that's the other thing. I'm not going to give them a hard time. They know what they need to do. And so they'll just say, look, Miranda, now I haven't been flossing every day. And so then we'll have a conversation about, well, what needs to happen? What would make it easier for you to be able to commit to flossing every day? Because yes, sometimes it's that there could be food in between the teeth, plaque in between the teeth, there might be tartar buildup, the gums might be bleeding. You know, there's a lot of clues that show us that plaque is not being fully removed, you know, every single day. So we do know is the simple answer. So just be
all right.
That's helpful.
it's helpful. Now, over the years, the whole flossing thing has kind of changed, because it used to be floss, then we moved on to tape, and now we've got those funny little brush things. So what is the latest? What's best?
Oh, I know. What a time to be alive. I think the options are almost endless, aren't they? Because it is so much better. Floss works for lots of people. It really does. It gets between those little tight spots. Tape is, again, easier for some people because it doesn't sort of shred so much and it's finer. You can get floss on a stick for people whose fingers don't behave or don't grip quite as well as they'd like them to. And if you have got bigger gaps, then I'm a big fan of the little brushes. There's lots of different makes out there. There's sort of rubbery ones that are a bit more bendy, a bit more forgiving. There's the bristly ones that are like a little mini toothbrush to get in between your teeth. And if your teeth are really tight, or say you're somebody who's, I don't know, got braces, which obviously makes it tricky to get in and around, or if you've got some crown and bridge work done where the gaps are really, really tight, or if your fingers just don't do what you want them to do, then there are air and water flossers out there. So I think the best thing to do would be to get an appointment, go and see a dental hygienist or dental therapist. You know, we're the ones who deal with prevention. That's our bread and butter. And then we can have a chat with you and try things out in your mouth to see if we can do it. And then we can get the mirror and then you can try it yourself. And we can work together to find a tailored way, you know, that works for you as an individual.
Yeah, well, that sounds like very good advice. Yeah. All right, next question. I'm going through these questions because they're all questions that I have, actually, and I've wondered about. So nothing like the present to no time like the present to ask these things.
Yep.
What about mouthwash? Because you use a bit of mouthwash, feels kind of nice. Mm-hmm. Does it do anything, really?
Yeah, they do. There's two distinct groups, really, and it depends what your needs and wants are as an individual patient. So typically you've got ones that are just about fluoride, which are more about decay prevention. And then you've got those that are a bit more antibacterial and more from a gum health point of view. And so if you were somebody who wanted, like you say, just a bit of a freshen up after your lunch or when you've come in from work or something, or if you're heading out for a night out, then any standard fluoride mouthwash will do the job. And that is best to be used at a totally separate time to brushing. You know, if you're someone who's got a dry mouth, perhaps because of medications or a health problem that you have, or if you're struggling to get all the plaque away every single time, or you have a high decay experience, then definitely use a fluoride mouthwash at one other time in the day. Doesn't matter when, but you wouldn't really want to be doing it straight after brushing. You're going to get the best benefit if you do it at a separate time. Okay. And then there's others out there, like I say, the antibacterial ones. And the way they're designed is that when you're brushing and flossing or using your interdental brushes, that you will be removing the bulk of the plaque bacteria. And then if there is any still sitting around, which there always will be, nobody's going to remove everything. But then if you get an antibacterial mouthwash in there, then that will help to kill the rest of the bugs. And that will help to promote gum health.
Okay. Right. We will get on to this link between other diseases and oral health soon, I promise you.
But okay.
I've got another question. I'm sure I've come across people talking about toothpaste that doesn't have fluoride in, because they're for some reason they're kind of anti-fluoride. Now, why is there any benefit in using a toothpaste which doesn't have fluoride in? Is, you know, why would you do that?
Well, it's down to personal choice, isn't it? Personal beliefs, personal choice. I would always advocate for a fluoride toothpaste because there's stacks of evidence. It's been around for decades for how it does prevent decay and keep the teeth strong. However, if you are somebody that chooses not to use fluoride, then there are other products out there that you can buy in a dental practice that have other ingredients in. It's hard to say it without using a brand name, but they'll have other ingredients that will still strengthen the teeth and help to make acid resistant. And then there's others that perhaps might include things like xylitol, which is an artificial sweetener, but that has also been shown to help reduce the levels of plaque bacteria in the mouth. And if nothing else, you're still going to be brushing with it. So you will still be physically, mechanically removing the plaque.
Right.
So there's still a benefit in doing that.
All right. And then, not to get too political, but there's a lot of talk about getting fluoride in the water supply.
Yeah.
Now, I think that probably helps a lot of people with their, you know, with their teeth or their oral hygiene. Some people don't like the idea of being given kind of a medicine, as they might call it, that they can't avoid. So, what does the president of the British Society of Dental Hygiene have to say about that? I do understand that might be a bit of a difficult question.
I appreciate your sensitivity there. I think, in the first instance, it's not a silver bullet. It's something, it's a catch-all. I think I did my training in the north of England and in quite a deprived area, and water fluoridation wasn't around up there. You know, I was seeing children who were one of three or four who had to share a toothbrush. You know, they weren't brushing every single day, and I saw the effect that that had on their teeth. So if I think about families like that and children who, for whatever reason, are struggling with dental health, it's about getting good things in for them to safeguard or help to safeguard their future. Because, you know, children having time off school because of dental decay, sleepless nights, parents having to take them to the dentist, taking time off work, children having to have general anaesthetics to have teeth out. It's still the biggest reason for an under 10 to have a general anaesthetic is just to have teeth out. And it's
in modern
2024, yes. And it's entirely preventable. So if we could bring in community water fluoridation, I genuinely do believe that that would help. And to reassure people, it's a tiny, tiny amount. There's a measurement that we use called parts per million. You'll see it on your toothpaste tube, ppm. Now, your average adult toothpaste will have 1,450, that's 1,450 measurements, this ppm of fluoride. All they're talking about doing is one. So that's just a single digit of one ppm of fluoride into the water. It's tiny, but it has been shown through years and years of evidence and trials that just that small amount will help to have a beneficial effect and protect teeth from decay.
Yeah, okay. What about some other ways of helping us have less sugar? So there was the sugar tax a while ago. You know, has that made any difference? Have you noticed patients with better teeth since the sugar tax, because we're having less sugar in the sugary drinks and stuff like that?
That's a good question. The simple answer is, I don't know. It's hard for me to quantify that.
Yeah.
Because
I do love it when my guests say that's a good question, Miranda.
You're
one of my favourite guests now.
No, it's a great question. And I think somebody either should do some research. If they haven't done already, I'd have to look it up. But I think from a day-to-day point of view, what I do see with my patients is there is a distinct shift from having a sugar-loaded fizzy drink. They are moving more towards diet or sugar-free options, which has to be beneficial because we know that teeth can cope with four or five what we would call acid attacks, so that's sugar exposures in a day. So long as you're brushing twice a day, that balance should be enough to prevent tooth decay happening. But when we're having a sugary drink, you know, it's just the can on the table, isn't it? And you're sipping on it and it could last you an hour or more. So for that whole time, your teeth are being bathed in sugar. They're being bathed in acid. They're at risk. So the diet drinks, they take away that sugar, but unfortunately, they're still not perfect. Again, not the silver bullet, because they're still quite acidic. So even though it's less sugar and it's a step in the right direction, I do still caution my patients that if they can keep them to a meal time, try and stick to just plain water or unsweetened tea and coffee in between meals, and then save that fizzy drink for a meal time because it is still going to be acidic.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Interesting. Right. Something that you mentioned at the start, which is kind of very interesting, and I know virtually nothing about. So I'm looking forward to asking about this. Links to poor oral hygiene and other diseases, other problems. And, you know, I had a quick look on the internet for, you know, some of the issues that people say this can lead to. You know, we've got heart disease, stroke, diabetes, colon cancer, respiratory disease. I mean, it's a long list. So tell us a bit about that. What could be the possible link? And is it true?
It's 100% true. Varying degrees of being true. There's some conditions like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, that there's loads and loads of evidence, lots of research that supports this.
This is proper published research, is it? Peer-reviewed published research.
Yep. It's accepted throughout world communities in dentistry and also in other healthcare arenas. Then the other things which are a slightly looser link, but it's more that it makes sense. It's down to inflammation. It's pure and simple inflammation in the body. And the reason why the mouth is linked with these different parts of the body, I think of the bloodstream as being a bit like the underground, you know, so it's traveling around, you know, your big toe up to your teeth, your right thumb and so on. But that same blood is circulating all around the body. So if there's inflammation in the mouth, which is one of the hallmarks of someone who's got gum disease, their gums are bleeding, then that inflammation will travel around to other areas. And so that's where, in terms of heart disease, what it does, the inflammation, the bacteria go into the heart vessels. They can trigger the laying down of fatty deposits, which will then lead to the narrowing of the arteries. So that's where your stroke risk, your heart disease risks come into play. Then the bigger one is type 2 diabetes. That's a two-way link, a bi-directional link. So we've known for a very, very, very long time that if someone has undiagnosed / untreated / poorly managed type 2 diabetes, we know that their gum health won't be as good. We know that they're more prone to infections. We know that they're at a much higher risk of tooth loss. It also goes the other way if there's inflammation.
Can I just interrupt you there? So just supposing someone is suffering from diabetes, there are lots of different reasons for that. Part of it is lifestyle. So if you're the sort of person that eats loads of sweets, drinks lots of sugary drinks, doesn't do much exercise, you might get diabetes. I mean, you might not, but you might be a little bit more likely. And you're also more likely to have bad teeth. It doesn't necessarily mean that the bad teeth causes the diabetes. It's just the way your lifestyle is likely to cause both.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head there. It's something called common risk factors. And that is something that I certainly talk a lot about with my patients, that yes, if you're a type 2 diabetic, you need to be thinking of reducing, or ideally cutting out to the bare minimum where you can, of sugary foods and drinks. And then that will then have the knock-on effects of improving your dental health. The undisputed link, though, between mouth health and type 2 diabetes is with gums. So I talked about gum inflammation, and that happens where the plaque bacteria sits, you know, they nestle in along the gum line around the teeth. They sit in that little crevice. Now, everybody's body has a different tolerance, if you like, a different threshold for how much of this plaque bacteria their body, their immune system is prepared to tolerate. And that's set when you're put together. That's just how your body works as an individual. So, but if your plaque levels build up, which they do every day, but if you don't remove them and that plaque is left sitting there, once it passes this sort of critical threshold, the immune system then starts to take notice. Then it's all bells and whistles. We've got a problem. So it will send a whole load of your white blood cells down to that area, down to the gums, to try and fight this bacteria. So that's the inflammatory response. That's what we call the host response. So that's your body trying to kill these bugs. So you get extra blood come into the gums. So that's when you'll notice they're a bit red. They might be a bit tender. They bleed when you're brushing or flossing. Sometimes people, bite into an apple. That can even make the gums bleed. So that's the first sign of inflammation. That's the first sign that something is wrong. And so when your body is in this inflammatory state, when the system is thinking, oh, I've got an infection, what then happens, as we now know, the liver has many, many functions. One of them is that it stores sugar. And I forget the term of how it's stored, but it stores sugar. And so in this inflammatory situation, the liver says, okay, I'll send out some sugar to try and help fight this infection. So you've got all this additional sugar circulating in your body, which is then spiking your diabetes problems and throwing the levels off. So it's very much a two-way thing that one very much impacts on the other.
Okay. And this has been noticed, discovered for all sorts of things. Colon cancer as well. That's one that I saw mentioned.
Yes, I don't know so much about that one. But again, it's most likely going to come in from inflammation. And if you think about the colon and the whole gastrointestinal tract, well, the mouth is the start of that. The mouth is the very beginning of that. So for me, it's absolute logic, common sense that that will have an impact potentially.
Yeah. Okay. Goodness me. A lot of useful information there. Let me finish on one thing, which it might sound a bit flippant. It's not meant to. When people have absolutely perfect teeth, sometimes I think they look a bit odd. Do you know what I mean? If someone's teeth, you know, if they're all perfectly in line and they're gleaming white, they look like a cartoon character. Have you ever had people come to you or to some of your colleagues and say, you know, I would like perfect teeth? And they turn around and say, well, sorry, I'm not going to do that for you because you're going to look a bit funny.
I'm not sure that any of my colleagues would ever say that you're going to look a bit funny. I think there's a lot of pressure these days with the media, with television, online things about what means, what makes a perfect smile. And I think now, because it is a lot of it is linked with self-esteem and, you know, your mental well-being, how we look, how we present ourselves, having confidence, going to jobs. I just think now we have the knowledge, I suppose. We have the knowledge, we have the techniques, orthodontics, great, you know, the things that orthodontists can do to align teeth, to give people a lovely natural smile. I think sometimes, yeah, some celebrities, as you say, when you see them, it's a bit too perfect, a bit too white. But that's, again, it's personal choice. My teeth are by no means perfect. They're not perfectly aligned. They're not perfectly white. But I do love my smile. You know, as the theme of this month, I do love my smile. It's healthy. I can eat my favorite dinner. So I think, yeah, I think live and let live. If people are happy and they want to do that and it's not causing any damage, then let them crack on.
And actually encouraging people to smile and people being happy about smiling is probably going to be good for their health in all sorts of other ways as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps us make connections, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. All right. So look, if people are listening to this and thinking, I would like to do something about looking after my teeth a little bit better. I listened to that, but I want to go back and get some more information or additional information. What's a good resource for people to kind of really get to grips with some of this stuff?
Well, in the first instance, I'd suggest that people look up the Oral Health Foundation. So their web address, you can find them at dentalhealth.org. They've got a whole load of resources about different health conditions. And then on the flip side, ways of looking after your mouth health as well. And then the organisation I'm president of, we do have a patient-facing page, small in information, but it's there. And, you know, we can certainly help point you in the right direction of finding a dental hygienist or dental therapist that's local to you. And we'll happily help you take you on that journey to mouth health.
Right. Will you help people find those sort of that help on the NHS as well as privately?
Oh, I'd love to. But unfortunately, that's not our remit. We're a membership organisation.
Right, right.
People do want help. If you go onto the NHS websites, they do have a find a practice in your area. And then anywhere that is taking on new patients will be listed on that.
Okay. All right. Either way, fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time, Miranda. It's much appreciated.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you very much to my guest on this week's show, and that was Miranda Steeples, President of the British Society of Dental Hygiene and therapy. And a couple of things just to let you know before you go. I am also on Hertfordshire Local Radio doing a live show. This is a pre-recorded podcast, but I am doing a live show in Hertfordshire, just north of London. That's on Mix 92.6. That's on Mondays from 4 to 7. You can hear that by asking your smart speaker for Mix 92.6. Or you can go to the website, mix926.com, and listen live or use the Listen Again facility there. It's a different sort of show. It's a local radio show. It has some music and some chat, a bit of gossip. Very good. The whole of the Mix radio station is definitely worth listening to. Also, I've got to ask you, how is your back? Are you suffering from a stiff back or some back pain? If you have to sit a lot at your desk for work and it's proving a problem for you, do have a look at my website, relaxbackuk.com. The back app chair is potentially the thing for you. It has helped a lot of people suffering from back issues, back pain, stiff back, all that sort of thing. Have a look, and it may well be something that can help you a lot and improve your quality of life dramatically. So thank you very much indeed for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.